What's up, folks? This is Victor Cruz with another episode of the Victor Cruz Acting Studio Podcast. That's right. And today my guest on the show is an actor, started out as an actor, but is now an award-winning writer, producer, filmmaker, the creator of the award-winning show, One Woman Show, known as Brownsville Bread, now a book. She is also an author. And look, when it comes down to it, she is just an amazing human being, wears so many different hats, but is my good friend. Please welcome to the show, Elaine Del Valle. Oh, so great.
I like the music.
It's good, right?
I like the music.
Who is my friend?
More applause, though.
Oh, more applause, okay. Of course. Applause.
And the chicken sound for your daughter.
Oh, you know the chicken sound.
Oh, you know it.
Oh, yeah, I do have the chicken sound. It's somewhere here. She knows exactly what the buttons are.
I'll now, wait for her to press it.
Yeah, she is it this one here? There it is.
That reminds me of when I lived in Brownsville, there was a chicken house where people would go and pick out the chicken that they wanted to eat that night.
Yeah.
And they would just...
Oh, my God. So you were you born in Brownsville?
I was born in Brownsville, yes.
Right. And you lived there up until what age?
Up until 18.
18. So you, I mean, Brownsville is embedded.
Bread, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's embedded in your DNA. I mean, it's a part of who you are and how you approach projects. You find that a lot of things that you grew up with is kind of how you approach certain projects.
Well, I think no matter what you're doing, you have to lean into what it is about you that makes you the best person to tell that story.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, for sure. But that, it's not only Brownsville, it's everything that makes me who I am.
Right.
But whenever I'm writing, I always find myself writing, you know, they say write what you know.
Sure.
So you write the characters that you know the best,
mm-hmm.
the most intimately, and then they become the best characters. And our Latinx community needs our characters to be out there so much. We tell our own stories, our stories to tell. And so I'm really grateful to have the experience that I have as an urban Puerto Rican Latina to be able to tell those stories that I've been a part of and witnessed and tell it in a way that is not of judgment,
mm-hmm.
but of love.
Sure.
So lots of people tell me that they feel like they love my father.
Mm.
My father died when he was 36.
Wow.
When I was 17. So for them to tell me, like, I love your father. I wish I knew him, but I love him. Well, thank you, because that's part of the reason why I started to tell the story was to prove he existed.
Wow.
I remember I had an art teacher, an oil on canvas teacher, and he said, why do we paint?
Mm.
Why do we create the art? Everybody in the class, I don't know. He said, to prove we exist.
Wow.
And that's such a blessing to say, prove we exist.
I love that your father lives on and so strongly, you know, whether it's in your one-woman show and now your book, mm-hmm. and people can, you know, can experience who he was and the kind of impression he had on you growing up. And also the love that you felt in your house and your friends and
yes.
how you saw the world. I think that's so cool. And I have to say this because I admire you so much for all the different hats that you wear in this business. And you do it for me because I'm not you, but for me, I feel like you do it so fearlessly, but you're also so humble, so humble. Like everybody loves you. Such a kind person.
Thank you.
And I love that about you. Like you're not above anything or anyone. Like you've never been that way.
I work very hard to just keep working hard.
Yeah.
And always give people the benefit of the help. If they're working that hard,
mm-hmm.
then they deserve it.
Sure.
So, but there are people who come to me and say, hey, I want a shot. I think I could be an actor. And with that, sometimes I do get like, so basically you're saying that anyone who's ever taken classes and everything that I've done, my studying at Carnegie Hall under Win Hanman for 3 years, you can do that. That's what you're telling me. Okay. So I actually, with those people, you know, I try to be as kind as I can. I say, listen, I recommend this acting school.
Hey.
I recommend this. It's for all levels. And mm. if you're really serious about it, start.
Yeah.
And then that for me is a sign that they are, that they can do it and they can take themselves seriously, because everybody deserves a shot, but you need to work at it to hone your craft. Everything that I do, I have to hone my craft.
Sure.
I started directing before I was a director.
Mm-hmm.
I actually didn't think that I wanted to direct. I just knew that the path of writing was going to be something that was going to lead to something for me, because with Brownsville Bread, it was proving that for me.
Mm-hmm.
So when Brownsville Bread came up, I knew I just have to keep doing this because things are happening because of it. And I started to write a web series back before web series were a thing.
That's right.
And I wrote with my friend Holly, Reasons Why I'm Single. Reasons, the letter Y.
Love that series. Love that series. Makes me crack up.
So many people love it. And I love it too.
My favorite one, I think, is when you guys are in the store and the guy who looks like the guy from The Walking Dead.
Oh, yes. That's the pharmacy episode.
Yeah, the pharmacy episode.
It's actually called I Tweet Jay-Z episode.
Yeah. Oh, it's hilarious. Hilarious.
Thank you so much. That's one of my favorite episodes.
Yeah, it's great.
Definitely. And the production value went up tremendously as I kept on doing it. So when I first started doing it, when I knew that, okay, I'm going to produce it, I'm definitely going to be in it, I'm going to write it, and I'm going to have this actress in it, I started casting it and everything. But I was trying to get a director, any director. And I reached out to various directors that I had worked with that I liked, that were my friends. And they were like, nah, because web series wasn't really a thing. But then when they saw it, they got back to me and said, hey, yeah, I'll direct that. And I was like,
too late. I'm on it.
I'm good. But then still, I still didn't really know the craft of directing. What I knew is that I had a vision and I knew how to direct actors because I was an actor.
Sure.
So I knew how to. And for that matter, I knew who to cast in the role. I think casting is so important to any project, because you could be the best actor in the world, but the person after you will be a good actor, but they will embody the role. And to be able to see that and choose your own role as a writer, you get to choose your own role.
Right.
I wrote Brownsville Bread. I played that part.
That's right.
I chose that role. And I'll never forget when I was done first doing the play, one day at a festival, a guy said to me, great casting. You did great. And I said to him, thanks so much. And I thought to myself, I would have never gotten the opportunity to play this part. Wow. No one would have ever even thought of me for this Brownsville Bread.
So just out of the need to create a platform in which you could work as an actor, did you find, is that when you became a casting director, or did you enjoy the casting process as well as being an actor? And I mean, how did you start as a casting director?
Oh, that is a great story.
Mm.
So all through Brownsville Bread, I have to say, so I performed Brownsville Bread and I invited everyone that I knew. And one of the people who showed up was a producer at an advertising agency. Now, even though I wasn't being seen for parts like Brownsville Bread, that I really wanted to do parts like that, I was a commercial darling. I was in so many commercials. This really sells. Hola. No.
Listen, Elaine, you are a beautiful, beautiful woman.
No,
aside
I mean
from
like,
being,
I mean, like,
you mean
like
for commercials, like
commercials. Yes. Yes.
Hello. How are you?
Yes. Este carro es tan bueno. No, but so he showed up and he loved the show. And he just said to me, I want to work with you every single day, but I can't hire an actor every day. So what else do you do?
Wow.
And I said to him, what do you need? Let me know what you need. And then he just thought about it for like, I don't know, 5 seconds. And he said, do you do casting? And I thought, and I thought the same, what as I said, I have been to every single casting director's office in New York. I know a good experience from a bad experience. I've been in the room at callbacks. I know when I get booked. I understand being on set, all of those things. And yes, I think that I can do that if you give me a shot. I think that I can accomplish that. Wow. And the first thing that I did was a print ad for AARP. And then I moved on to the commercial worlds, and then I got McDonald's and more, all the AARP, you know, on-camera sure. broadcast stuff. And I really built my business on commercials. Mm-hmm. And then I built a website, and I did all the search engine optimization on it. And then people started finding me because there are not many bilingual casting directors in New York or anywhere for that matter. And you know, you really have to be authentically bilingual in order to discern by ear what people are sounding like,
that's right.
what the accent is, and those sorts of things. So now it's been over a decade that I have been casting. And now I have cast feature films for Comedy Central series. I've cast for tons of commercials. I mean, the list goes on and on. And now I am so proud and happy to say that I just became the head of casting for a new animated series that is SAG for one of the greatest companies, Pipeline Studios, which is a big animation studio. And I am not allowed to say everything about the project and all of the people involved, but I promise you that when you find out, when the public finds out what's going down, I was so proud to be a part of it. Like, I wanted to. I was like, let me, like, there's, first of all, there's no better person to do the job. Mm-hmm. I'm allowed to say that it is about, it takes place, it's set in the Bronx with, or in New York, and the family is from the Bronx and they're a Puerto Rican family. So when I was doing the interviews and I was recommended for the part, and but I still had to, you know, they had to do their due diligence. And I was doing the interviews and I said, are you listening to me? Because this, no one else can do any better than that. I am what you need. So, but they were wonderful. And then they said, we'd love to have you on, you know, and it's a lot of business stuff that goes on as well, but the contract is wonderful and they're great. And I love the director that recommended me for it. Yeah. So I'm just very excited to work on the project, but also because it is sincerely a project that is going to grow our Latinx community. And starting from the ground up, from, I mean, I'm casting adults, an entire family, but I'm also casting children. So if I'm casting a five-year-old bilingual Latinx from the Bronx, I need to not only go after the people who we know are out there, all the agents and managers and everybody knows are is out there, but I have to really go into the community and put it out there. And that to me is a unique gift.
I love
because
that.
Because I am letting people know you can do this. You don't need any experience. You're 5 years old. We're going to give you the experience. And then I get to listen. Then parents who never even thought that, you know, their kids or whatever. And then the parents who didn't, who never taught their children Spanish will say, oh, I should have taught my child Spanish. And then the next one is going to know Spanish or something like that. Yep. You know, but I really feel like, oh, here's a real opportunity for me to affect change. And for something, this project will affect change.
Yeah, I love that approach. I love that it is what I consider to be the home cooking, because you're going after the home cooking. You're going to the community. Yes. Now, as a casting director, because I'm curious to know from your perspective and your experience now, man, a decade of doing this.
Over
a decade. How, this may be such a loaded question or a big question or very general, but how does an actor book the audition? That is like an ongoing question. Now it depends, right? Because there are different things. There's film, there's TV, there's comedy, there's drama, there's commercials, so many different things. But actors are always trying to figure out, how do I book the audition, or how do I leave an impression in that room? How would you answer
that? I always say, don't worry about the part. Book the room, don't book the part.
Right.
So I would say, just be super prepared. Because just like I said before, you might be wonderful and great and the best actor for any part, However, the person that embodies it is going to get it over you. And then you don't know who's going to be the star and how you might look like the star. So you might not get it because of that. Or you might be, you know, they might age it up or they might change the character entirely. So it's never really something within your control. So just control what you can. Do the best that you can. Know your sides. If you're asked to self-tape, do it. Yeah. And do it well. You know, I make...
Well, you have some great videos on where you...
Not because I'm like a video tutorial person.
Right.
But because I feel like this is what they need. Let me support them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I try to do. I try to... Here's a link. If you don't know how to do this, professionals disregard. This mm-hmm. is like how to for dummies book. But this is what I wish I had a long time ago when I first started in the business. So it does help. And I do get a lot of people saying, thank you so much. This was so helpful. But it's really about just helping our community be better and the best that it can be, because we all represent one another.
Yeah. What are the ingredients of a good self-tape?
An empty background, a clear background. We can turn the camera to your studio because I know that you do them here. And it's just, the actor needs to be the star of it. Mm-hmm. The background cannot be the star.
Right.
The actor needs to be the star of it. They need to be genuinely engaged in the role. If you think about a self-tape, here's a few things that self-tapes help with.
Mm-hmm.
When I go into a room and I schedule auditions for actors, I can only see how many. Think about it. There are only so many minutes in the day, even if I'm going really fast and seeing people together, which I try not to do, try to give everybody their time because they deserve it. Mm-hmm. I know what it's like to have to get ready for it and get there and park your car or get to the train and all of these things that make me, I think, a little more empathetic to the actor coming out to me. Mm-hmm. But I would say clear background. When I'm watching the tape, if you lose me, I'm just gonna skip
to the next one.
Yeah. You don't have time to lose me. So, but here's the thing.
And what would lose you? Like if you're watching an audition, what would take you out that you sort of just skip to the next?
Not a great performance. Or like if it's a ridiculous tape, like I gave you this dumb video that I created to help you at least use it.
Right.
If I say tape horizontally, I don't expect to see it taped vertically.
Right.
That's a big no-no. It's like out of the picture.
Sure.
The only time that I rely on those is if I have no other options.
Right.
But, you know, your tape has to represent you, and it also has to represent me to my client. So it's got to pass the test of it's got to look really good. And so getting back to the scheduling, I can only see about 85, maybe 100. Okay, I've done 145 once.
In one day?
In one day.
Wow.
Yes. I was seeing families. I was seeing them all together. It was for a commercial for Christmas time. And so that's how I was able to do it. And I did it 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
I saw like 145 people a day. So that's really hard. But in a self-tape, you have the ability to self-tape and then watch yourself and say, that's good. That's what I want to send.
Mm.
So I expect you to have that luxury, take that luxury, take it for yourself, and then deliver what you think is the best thing for you. So I'm a little harder on those tapes than I am. I mean, I'll remember once I got this call, and it was for the show Empire, or the mm-hmm. show Star.
Right, and which is same producers.
Right. Yeah. Same producers. And Terrence Howard and Lenny Kravitz were in New York on this one day in 48 hours.
Mm.
And so they wanted to do the promo. Okay. And they needed all of these people. And they said, oh, we need them by tomorrow.
Wow.
And
fast.
I was like, oh okay. Now, they needed the tapes. They needed everything. So I was literally calling people. Well, when I put out the breakdown, I said, you will be asked to self-tape from wherever you are.
Mm.
And I had people self-taping in the bathroom. It didn't matter. But I told my client to expect that's the only way.
And they were okay with
it.
They said, well, listen, this is all we got.
Yes,
we will take
it. And we had to hire about 40 people.
Wow.
So I worked all night. Once they made their decisions, I worked all night to contact the people and let them know. And then don't you know what? They did a big article on it. And they were like, we were able to get this production through in 48 hours and da-da-da-da-da and the turnaround time and everything. I was like, where the heck is the mention of the casting?
I was just thinking that. Did they mention your name?
No. But they do still hire me. So
yeah,
that's
great.
The gift.
That's great. The gift, that's yes. Really great. Well, maybe one more question on casting, and then I want to move on to some other things that you're doing and working on.
Oh, wait, let me finish answering.
Yes, yes.
Clear voice.
Yep.
I can see you. Don't chew gum.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though the character might be looking like it, unless it says it specifically in the thing,
right.
Don't chew it, please. Don't worry about props too much, but use them. You know, if there's a knife that comes out, you can definitely do that.
Right. They bring an actual knife?
Well, not to me. I'm saying self-tape.
No,
don't
self-tape,
bring a knife
right.
to my office.
Well, right. Don't go to your office. Actually, yeah, right. So big difference. Self-tape, use
yes,
what you need.
Yes, yes.
But if they come to audition for you in the room, should they bring an actual knife?
No. But if they're using a phone, then it's okay. Use your phone.
Right.
That's fine. But, I mean, there are people who give classes on this.
Yeah.
And I've taken them.
Yeah.
I know, I mean, you must give something like this, but.
Yeah, I teach an on-camera class at HB Studio. Once right. a week. And then I'm going to start teaching them here at my studio, probably in the summertime and into the fall.
That's great. It's very helpful to on-camera technique.
Mm-hmm.
I took one, a very expensive one. It was like $600.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a while ago.
Yeah.
But I found it so helpful.
Yeah, for sure. And there's a lot of really cool things about it too, because in those classes, you get a chance to see yourself. You see what you're doing.
Yes.
You get used to the idea. I remember the first time I saw myself on TV, I was like, that's not me.
Yeah.
That's
well,
not
no
what
one
I sound
looks
like.
Themselves
Whoa!
Or sounds like themselves.
You know,
I don't even watch, like I still get parts and I'm like, oh God, no, I don't want to see that. I don't, you know, you're brought back to reality. Like, oh, I really do look my age.
Oh, no. No one will ever know your age. For me, you are young forever.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you look the same to me
well,
for
you
so
look
long.
The same. You
well,
look the same
I don't know. I don't know about that. So are you able to cast yourself in some of the projects? I mean, because you're also an actor and a casting director. Is it frowned upon?
Well, it's funny because I'm a director.
Yeah.
And a producer and a writer. So I can put myself in parts. And for my movie, my first short film as a director, Final Decision, starred Berto Colon and a wonderful little Afro-Latina actress, Elin Jamie Jenkins. And I wanted to play the part of the mother,
mm-hmm.
but I actually had two other actresses on hold or asked them to if they would. And a couple of them just weren't available. Another one said, yeah, sure, I'll do it. But I let them know in advance, like, I think I want to play this part. But the only reason why I could actually play the part is because I wasn't interfering with the work of those other actors. Like, I wasn't directing them at the right. same time that I was playing because the character was very removed
Got
from
it.
The relationship. And so every time I acted alone or with ancillary characters. And I knew exactly what I wanted. And I had a wonderful cinematographer that I just said, do we have it? And she said, yes. And I never do playback on myself.
You trust
it. I'll never be satisfied.
Right. You'll go through like 400 takes.
Well, you know, I should have at least given myself more coverage.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't even give myself more coverage. I was just, we don't have time for me.
Got it.
And that's why I don't put myself in the roles that I create as much anymore. And as I've grown as a director, I feel like, no, I need to just direct when I'm directing. And I can't be involved in my own, you know, how this looks or whatever. And I am glued to my monitor as a director.
Mm-hmm.
I like don't blink. I need like I don't want to miss a moment of the performance because I know when it comes down to the editing room, I'm going to see all the mistakes and notice things that if I wasn't paying attention that much, it's just as a director, I feel like I have to really be there for my actors.
Yeah.
And I think one of the best things that I think as a director is I want every single actor in my piece to be giving their best possible performance. So my last film, Princess Cut.
Which, by the way, looks amazing. I just watched the trailer. I think it was on Instagram.
Watch the trailer.
Is it okay if I just show the trailer on this? All right, so let's cut to the trailer right now.
I just don't know how you're ever gonna pay off that engagement ring if you just blew all your landscaping money at the used car lot.
I told you we had to invest in a four-door if I'm gonna drive for Uber. Look, all the local guys want a little something-something for Richie Rich in the summer.
Well, as of yesterday, summer's officially over. Are you closed? Your sign says 24 hours. Actually, it says 24 whores, but whatever. I need to borrow your phone. Fancy lady like you ain't got no phone.
Hey. Jimmy. You born yet or what? You got a fare?
It's my girl, my fiance, actually.
I swear I could kill him. I worked the night shift at a laundromat. You ain't my first whack job.
I'm not a whack job.
What do you say we settle up?
What? You're not gonna let me win back some of the money I lost?
You could slice a bitch with that princess cut. So what's that, 3 carats?
4 1/4, actually. You're trying to rob me?
What kind of sicko game you playing here?
You lowlife! I should have known the moment I laid eyes on you. Why did you do that? I have never done anything wrong. Nothing. Why did you betray me?
And we're back. That was amazing. I'm telling you, it looks so good. When is the, by the way, I know we're still talking about directing, but when does this film come out?
This film comes out March 7th.
March 7th.
At the Miami Film Festival. It makes its premiere March 7th.
Oh my God, congratulations.
I'm so excited. I'm really over the moon. It's the first time that I've ever adapted someone else's material for screen. You know, as a director, I usually
write my stuff, and then
I direct it and produce it. But I was lucky enough to see a play, a stage play by Demetra Karaman called Bitch Brow. And I happened to be in L.A., which I'm hardly ever in L.A., happened to be in L.A., and the Fringe Festival was happening, and I saw it on social media. I was like, oh, I'm going to go to this. I knew the girl's mother, the writer's mother, and I was like, I have to go to this. And I went, and I just closed my eyes, and I could just see it all. I love the setting. I love the characters. I knew the characters because I've lived on Long Island for most of my adult life. And it's set in the Hamptons. So people don't know this about the Hamptons because they just think, oh, the Hamptons, very bougie.
Right.
But it's only bougie from Memorial Day to Labor Day. Otherwise, all around the rest of the year, it's a gray collar, blue collar town.
Okay.
And then this mass influx of wealth comes in and changes everything. And this film takes place, and the play took place on the day after the mass exodus, which in my research of the work, I learned is now referred to as Tumbleweed Tuesday. Because it's right
Tuesday.
After the Monday of Labor Day.
Got
all
it.
The parties, and then everybody leaves.
Everybody just goes.
And the only people left are like a few stragglers and then the locals.
Wow.
So right there, it's like, oh, there's I love this.
There's something there.
And then the way that the characters, just everything that they said, even though they were played by LA actresses when I saw it, and they did a wonderful job, I just knew that I could make this the best film with what I knew of the people and what I know about the New York acting community and other acting communities as well. But I felt like I can get the best people for this. And I did, because the actors are amazing. And I said to them, I need you to trust me because we have very little bit of time. We were shooting all night times, but in the shortest nights of the year. So it was summertime, the shortest night. So we ran into daylight a lot. So we had to limit our time. And I'm a very collaborative director. However, I needed them to trust me. And I said to the actress, listen, everything that you did in the audition and everything that I've seen on you since has helped me to further craft the character. So I literally crafted the character for you, around you, and you need to know that I know what you're capable of, and this is how I see it. And she was like, this is the best directing, like, you're the best director that I've ever worked with. And no. I thought to myself, I wish I had this when I was, I mean, I had it with Wynn Hanman, of course, but as a character on screen, I didn't have directors ever say anything to me. You know that, you know this.
Yeah.
Very, very rarely.
Yeah.
You have even, and big directors, like
sure.
major directors have directed me.
Mm-hmm.
And all I get is action.
Yeah.
Go, cut, you know, like what? Something.
Yeah.
Give me something.
Yeah, because there's some directors that are just visual. And if the composition is right, then let's just go.
Well, I'm visual as well.
No, you are. You are, but
you
get in there with the actors and you're very supportive.
Sure.
And it's not to say to take away from those that are just more visual and less talkative or more involved with the actors. But it's just so great how you've created all of these opportunities for yourself, and it's all very organic and has happened exactly the way it's supposed to. It wasn't like you forced anything. You know, when you think of like when you became a casting director, how that happened.
Yes.
You weren't even trying, but you were so open and you said yes to it.
Open.
And it took you further on a journey that led you to, because I was working on a project with you where you were not the director originally. And I think you sort of stepped in and you played sometimes the director role, or you became more involved. I didn't want to say anything.
I can't remember.
It was a web series. It was a pilot. I don't know if you remember.
Oh,
but
yes,
you weren't planning that.
Yes.
Because
you
were just going to show up, I think, to, was it just to produce it?
I'll tell you what happened there. So again, from Brownsville Bread, the creators of a show, so they had a pitch deck. They came to see Brownsville Bread and they were like, please, we're going to pay for it. We want you to write it.
Yeah.
So I learned from Reasons Why that I really wanted to be able to have a pilot for myself that was, you know, the regular pilot amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that anymore, though. But the regular pilot amount of time, and that I would write it in this third, and this third. We would do 7.5 or 8 minutes, and then I would have altogether a whole pilot. And then
this is very smart. Because you can repurpose everything.
Yes. And I still love the writing of it. Of course, mm-hmm. I've grown as a writer. I mean, now I take all these Sundance classes, and I'm so happy to be a part of their institute, where I learned so much and have grown so much. But that particular project, lots of things happened, and I had to step in, and I stepped in a big way, because I didn't want to disappoint the entire cast that believed in me and did it for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I stepped in a major way,
right,
that I wasn't prepared. I mean, I was prepared to, because I financially could do it.
But you did not know you were not prepared for it happens.
That was not my role.
That's right.
But
that's
had to take it on, because I was told last minute and I was very upset. And
I'll
never forget, I said to the person who was giving me the news, like the night before, it was the night before we shot, and I think like call time was like 7 a.m. or something like that. And I said, just be there. And first I said, just tell me this. Did you get the craft services?
Could you at least take care of that?
And they said no.
Oh.
So I woke up super early and I went to the supermarket so that we would all have craft services. And I wasn't directing it, but I was full on producing it as well. And it wasn't my intention, because if I'm going to produce something, it takes me a lot of time to produce something. I have to check every box, cross every T, dot every I. I really believe in that.
You're amazing. You know, the stuff that you manage and all the things that you're doing, how do you find time? to create a book?
Oh, my book. I love it so much. I'm so proud of it. So back when I was performing Brownsville Bred as a stage play, I was sought after by a wonderful book packager. Mm-hmm. She was incredible. She said, I see this as a young adult fiction novel.
Wow.
And I said, you know, I see it more as an adult memoir, more like The Bluest Eye, but that was her realm.
Sure.
And I ended up signing an option agreement with her, or whatever it was called at the time. I don't know. And I didn't care. I was just really happy that she saw it as that. And I took away her ability to television and film rights, because that was always my intention.
Sure.
So she sat me down. She said, well, this is the way that it normally works. We hire a ghostwriter. You tell, it's like,
Slow down.
Stop the presses. I said, I'm a writer. Like, give me a chance. Said, oh, well, book writing is different from, I said, I'll tell you what, I've already written the first 10,000 words. Why don't you just read it?
Yeah.
And then if you think that we need a ghostwriter, I will definitely listen to you, mm-hmm. because you have the experience. And she read it and she said, you are the writer.
Wow.
Now you must write sample chapters. And okay. I think that what you've already written is one of them. And let's, you know, like just pick different scenes and just make the chapters. And I did that. And, you know, I learned a lot about the publishing industry and the way that you have to package something, and you have sample chapters and you develop a letter. And she did an amazing job at really packaging it. And she also would, you know, if I wrote something that wasn't clear, she would write, make this clearer, or I don't think I need that, mm-hmm. or I love it, yeah. you know, more of this. And oh, she was awesome. Just so wonderful to work with. And in the end, she couldn't sell it to the, not she couldn't, they would not buy it. Mm. And she was
why? Very,
she told me don't ever repeat what she would say, so I'm not going to repeat it.
Okay.
But I'll tell you this. On the shelves of a major chain that year was a book by a major person of Latinx descent who wasn't probably did not write it, probably had a ghostwriter, right. just loaned the name and stuff, but it wasn't selling. And so with that, they didn't want to take another chance on another Latinx story. They also said that they felt that it was too dark. Mm. I said, Bambi's mother dies.
You know, yeah, what like, about Mufasa and I mean, Lion King? How that went
all
down.
All of that. So I was very disheartened from it. And I was like, you know what? Okay, fine. I understand. And I have all these chapters written, but I understand. And then I said to her, you know what? I'm just going to write the book. And she said, no, you can't do that. That's not how it works. Because every publisher is going to want to have their input. So you can only give them a certain amount so that it feels to them that they're giving you their input.
Right.
And so, I mean, she had it with great people who loved it at major houses, but they couldn't sell it to their bosses right. at the end. So we stopped working together very amicably. I love her so much. And I started moving into film and television more and more. And then when I went to write my second film, mm-hmm. Me 3.769, which later got picked up by HBO.
And it's won
I love it.
Tons of awards.
Yeah.
Tons of awards.
Yes.
Congratulations,
I think
by the way.
Like, I don't know, like 10 best director awards.
Amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. And what a coup to get on HBO as a writer, director, yeah. producer. Ah, yay.
So and you've been building that relationship for a while.
Yeah, I've been producing them for a while. Mm-hmm. But this is the first time that I had written, directed, and produced something. And, you know, you never know what they're going to pick up. But I've been very fortunate that they like my taste.
Right.
And they like my work output. So, so I do my best to not embarrass myself. I don't show them things that, I haven't really made anything that I'm not really proud of lately. So,
you take good care of yourself. I think.
Oh, but the book.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Well, it seemed like you took a break from the book. You went on you continued on your director's journey.
Well, this is why I mentioned the Me 3.769, mm-hmm. because as I was thinking of what story do I want to tell next? Okay. I have to like, I want it to be like this. I want it to be like that. I know I want it to have Latinx characters. What do I want to tell? And then as I started thinking about the stories, I thought, you know what? I have some chapters. Let me look at those chapters and see if I can extract a story from that.
Sure.
And that's what Me 3.769 was. It's the pool scene.
Right.
But then I combined it with another scene. And then when I was done combining it, I was like, okay, something has to change about this thing. So I changed that. And then by the time I changed it, it was something entirely different. And so strong by itself that I could get rid of the other thing. So it really grew from one chapter, but it really took another direction entirely.
Yeah.
So it was just, it was organic and great. And you know, now I really, my dream is to make Brownsville Bread into a feature film and my directorial debut in a feature film. So part of writing the book was about a professional decision. Putting the book out there is, this is intellectual property. One of the best things that I ever heard anybody say to an audience to me I'm gonna get his name so wrong, but I think his name is Carlito Machete, mm-hmm. and his wife is Lia Benevenida, something like that, something with a B. They're amazing, and they write for like Grey's Anatomy, Empire, mm-hmm. Power. I don't know, all these shows they write for, and he said, I asked him, you know, what's your best advice? And he said, IP, intellectual property always sells. Walk in there and they say, well, where did the story come from? Oh, so he said that he had actually published a graphic novel to support like an alien show.
Okay.
And I was like, oh my gosh, an epiphany hit me. Like, I already have all these chapters.
Yeah.
So I looked back at the material and I said, this is it. I'm going to self-publish this.
Amazing. And right on time, right?
Right on time, because right at that time, KDP Amazon made it absolutely easier for anybody who wanted to self-publish. Now, don't get me wrong. I took every webinar that there was. It is a lot of work. There's sure. still work. Now it's in libraries. It's in Walmart. It's in Barnes & Nobles. Publishers Weekly I got a 10 out of 10 on Publishers Weekly. It's being taught in classrooms. It's being sold to schools now. Amazing. And this is all since I heard that person say that in September.
So, Elaine, we've run out of time. Where can folks purchase your book if they'd love to really follow your journey and get a chance to hang out with your dad?
Okay. And me and my mom.
And everybody your entire family, yeah, your neighborhood, the community you come from.
Yes. You can go on Amazon, on Kindle. It's also on Audible, where I personally narrate it.
Amazing.
So I did it in the
voice
of the show.
I'm downloading that today.
Oh, I'll give you a free code.
Oh, you don't have to. I want to support you.
No, I have 25 free codes.
All right. Which number am I? Just one. Like, no. Just
nine.
Checking.
Maybe 10. Yeah, but I want to get like reviews from that. And I just want to grow the book. And I'm more proud of the book than I thought that I would be, because remember, I'm thinking like IP. And then people contact me and like send me text messages like, I'm crying on the train right now. Or a school teacher reaches me and she says, I want to teach this to my 8th grade class in the Bronx.
That's amazing.
And then she gives it to her coworkers, and now it's being taught in 3 classes and at a college.
That's amazing.
So there you have it, folks.
So folks, this is available in so many places. Please dive into Elaine's world. Honestly, Elaine, thank you so much for being here today. It is beyond, and I'd love to have you again.
Thank you.
We'll bring you back. Maybe when Princess Cut is out there and it's playing, we'll bring you back for that. We'll get into that a lot more.
Princess Cut. Well, you saw the trailer, folks.
Oh my God. All right, folks. Well, thank you so much for hanging out with us today. Elaine is a good friend of mine. I'm so proud of her. If you have not subscribed to our channel, please do so. And like, if you feel that you enjoyed our episode today, please like us and share this with your friends and family. Until next time, I'm Victor Cruz.
Wait, you can follow me on Instagram at Elaine Del Valle Director.
Yes, her handles.
At Elaine Del Valle Director on Instagram. That's all I care about.
Ah, that's great. Well, we'll see you guys soon.
All right.
Take care, and until next time.
All right.